With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Jaeger CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at JaegerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Jaeger.
Everyone, this is Phil Jaeger, and welcome to CPA Review and More, where obviously we cover CPA review topics, but today we have More, and that's not his name, More. It is Michael Jameson, who is a CPA who lives in beautiful, I've never been there, Indianapolis, Indiana. Is that a small town, Michael?
It's about 1 million people in the city and about 2 million regionally, so not too small.
Are you a Midwesterner? Is that where you were born and raised?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm looking at your office, right? Or yes. You stole someone else's furniture. I don't know which one it is.
You're looking at my office.
Good, good. Michael, tell us, what do you do exactly? What is your area of expertise?
Sure. I'm a CPA here in Indianapolis. Work a lot with small to medium-sized businesses. We do outsourced accounting. We do tax work, tax planning, tax resolution. So pretty much really anything the small business needs on the accounting side. We don't do any sort of audit work. We stay away from that, like as far as financial statement audits, but we do represent clients and like audits from like the IRS, for example, or like the Department of Workforce Development.
What do you do as outsourced accounting? Please explain to me what that is.
Of course. So a lot of small businesses, it makes more sense for them to hire a firm like mine rather than for them to develop a internal accounting team, just from the standpoint of number one, cost, and just number two, if you're a an owner of a construction company, you probably don't know how to manage CFO. So it's a lot, you can outsource that to us. So then that way, we're taking care of your, financial statements, your books, any sort of tax matters, those types of things all get handled by our firm. So we're really an extension of that client's business.
These clients, are they in any particular industry? Did you pick an industry that you felt good with that you wanted to work with people in?
Sure. So we don't have any sort of client concentration where we have 70% of clients in one industry. We definitely have some industries that we work in more in than we do in others. We have medical dental space is definitely going to be one of those. Your just real estate space between people doing in construction, people in property management, real estate development, those types of things. That's going to be an area. And then also just the, IT space, that could be anywhere from managed service providers to companies that are, developing software, things of that nature. But we also have a lot of clients from other industries. So we have several restaurants we work with. We've got, some retail establishments. We've got some internet-based sellers. So, it's pretty much more of the closely held business versus the industry for us.
And where did you graduate college? What school?
Sure, University of Indianapolis.
Because I know the famous school there, because I used to be a David Letterman fan. Well, I'm still a David Letterman fan, is Bowling Green. Is that the one he went to?
No, Ball State is where he went.
Ball State. I knew it started with a B, and I screwed that one up. But it's Ball State. And is the stadium named after him?
I think so.
What has he done? Is he given a lot of money to the school, or...?
Yeah, he's definitely given money to the school, and I don't know if the stadium's named after him. I'm sure there's definitely a buildings there. I haven't I haven't been to Ball State's campus in a good decade, but I'm sure there's definitely stuff named after him there.
Now, what made you decide you wanted to major in accounting? Did you have that idea?
Well,
go ahead.
So I was, when I was starting in college, I was a business major, and I had my first accounting class, and I had a lot of friends who were struggling in it, and I just seemed to do well in it. And at that time when I was in school, you know, the economy wasn't as strong as it is now. And a lot of people that I knew, you know, that were in accounting, everybody pretty much got a job. Whereas in, you know, some of these other business related majors, you know, maybe a lot of them didn't. So they'd graduate school and, you know, still trying to find something. So it seemed like a good field. I've liked numbers my whole life. So I took introduction to financial accounting and then introduction to managerial and then kind of just kept going from there. And my junior year in college, I got a internship with a firm, and then
a medium-sized
firm here in Indianapolis. And then right after that internship, I got a full-time offer. So I did that and just kind of kept on in public accounting. In 2015, I started this firm. So now we've got a total of, I believe we have 14 on staff right now. And we've
very good.
Yeah, just been kind of growing and, figuring out what services our clients need and what services we can competently provide, and just trying to, you know, figure out what makes the most sense.
How do you, let me ask a question. You say that at the time you were in college, the economy was bad. Was that about 2008?
I was in college in 2008. Like 2006, yeah. 7, 8, yeah.
Right. And once again, did you see accounting as an area? I know you like numbers,
yeah.
But did you see that as an area that you probably would have an easier time to get a position in?
Absolutely. I definitely saw that as an area, at least based on the people that I knew, an area where people were, you know, didn't have any problems at all with employment. You know, this was obviously the kind of post Enron, you know, WorldCom age too. So, you know, there's just a lot of time being spent on like the public company side. So that, just based on the need for staffing there, that a lot of that pushed down where there was a need for, you know, really for accountants in, you know, in a lot of spaces. So
I think back then, if I remember, a lot of people used to major in finance. They thought that was the sexy area.
Yeah.
And 2008 came, and there really wasn't a big demand for accounting jobs in finance, in financial sector, right? Or, let me rephrase that. There wasn't a big demand to go into being a finance major anymore. All right?
Well, yeah, I think you still see people, I see a lot of, we have interns that we hire on a regular basis here, and we see a lot of people that are double majoring in accounting and finance, and I think that's always a good option. But I definitely think the accounting jobs are at least more prevalent here in Indianapolis.
How's the economy now in Indianapolis?
The economy is good. We've had, you know, the downtown area's been hit by a lot of the, you know, political climate and just some of the stuff that happened last summer, obviously the coronavirus stuff. The restrictions have been heavier in Marion County than the surrounding counties. So a lot of economic activity, I think, transitioned to surrounding counties. But we, as of this week, they've lifted more restrictions here. So hopefully we'll see kind of more of a resurgence to the downtown Indy area. I think that just overall there wasn't because of all the restrictions and because of, you know, really you can drive 10 miles and not have that. There was some of that going on. And then also Indianapolis has a lot of suburban areas that aren't that far away. So with people not being downtown working, I think some, you know, the restaurants have suffered. And then also we have a big convention business here. So,
really? You know, I didn't know that.
Yeah. In a normal time, you know, pretty much every week there's a different convention at the convention center. And then, you know, that fuels the restaurants and the hotels and the overall economy. And there's just been a lot less of that this year than there has been in the past. But, you know, we did have the NCAA tournament here, and that went on without any problems. I think I have high hopes over the next year that things will kind of get back to normal downtown.
Now, what happened during the COVID? A lot of your clients have problems staying in business, or did you notice, what was the change in your business with the COVID?
Yeah, sure. So we did have a lot of clients that had, you know, that were afraid. I mean, think legitimately. So, you know, a dental office, for example, you know, the government's telling you need to shut down for this unknown amount of time, right, 8 weeks, whatever. Obviously, you still have your bills. You still got to pay your rent. You still got to pay, you know, maybe you can lay your people off, but you still got to pay for, you know, loan payments you have. You still have to pay, you know, vendors that you have contracts with. So I think people were concerned at the beginning. And then also on the restaurant side, I mean, those guys that's who I feel the worst for. Those guys got hit so hard just by all the governmental restrictions. And I'm glad to see, like, the restaurant restart grants and employee retention credit, and then also both rounds of the PPP, essentially kind of the government making it right with those restaurants for just the restrictions that they imposed.
Did you get involved at all in that PPP plan as far as helping your clients get loans?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So we worked with, number one, when everything started, we made sure that our clients were aware of what was out there. So, you know, whether that was a phone call from us, emails, we reached out to them. We helped, I would say, probably at least 50 or 60 clients fill out applications for the PPP loans. Right now, we're helping a lot of people with the forgiveness applications. You know, they're pretty easy when you have less than $150,000 in a PPP. But when it's over $150,000, there's calculations that go into it. It's just the forms are more involved. So most of our clients don't want to do those themselves. They'd rather have somebody professionally prepare those applications, just, you know, for several reasons. Number one, peace of mind. So then they're not worried about, like, you know, the government coming 2 years from now and saying, oh yeah, that really shouldn't have been forgiven. Or, you know, just from the standpoint of, you know, making sure that they get all the forgiveness they're entitled to. Secondly, for businesses that do qualify for that employee retention credit, it's important to do the forgiveness and the employee retention credit in tandem. So those clients are having us prepare those in tandem for them. And so then that way they don't lose out on any benefits from the ERC based on, you know, the PPP forgiveness claimed.
How did you learn about all the regulations with the PPP plan so that you could offer that service? Or did you learn it as you were going?
So obviously staying on top of just the legislative changes is important. You know, we have some industry publications that, you know, provide updates, AICPA, CPA Practice Advisor, and then also there's been some several webinars from various sources that we've listened in on. When it was getting started, pretty much on a weekly basis, I mean, almost on a daily basis, there were changes to this. So I was typically listening in on a 2 to 3 hour webinar on a weekly basis just to stay abreast with the changes and be able to properly advise clients.
Because some people, a handful that I'm aware of, actually change their practice to go and become really sort of specialists, experts in this PPP. And they were asked to give talks all over. And they've actually built up their practice even more based on that knowledge of the PPP. Sure. Because it is, I mean, I talked to people today who are asked trying to get forgiveness, like here in Maryland. All right. Yep. They have not decided who really they've given forgiveness to yet. All right. It's amazing. They're still confused over this thing. And I don't know if it's ever been settled yet as far as I know the state of Maryland, the governor is going to forgive whatever was lent from the state of Maryland.
Oh, because they have a state program as well.
Yes. Yes.
Gotcha.
But
so as far as the PPP program goes, I mean, with round one, the forgiveness applications have been available for the smallest borrowers, the S application, which is the one that you don't have to submit all this documentation on. That application has been available since, I think it was like the end of January.
Yeah.
That one's pretty easy. You know, those we've seen typically get approved within a few days. So you get it submitted, you get it e-signed or whatever, and then, you know, three or four business days later, the SBA comes back and say, okay, your loan's forgiven, and that's kind of a done deal. The ones that we've seen take a little bit longer are the ones that are over $150,000, where you've got to submit documentation, et cetera. We've had clients, we had one client try to do it themselves, and one of the banks here was like, okay, thanks, you've been approved for $15,000 of forgiveness, and their loan was like $200,000. So they did get an opportunity to redo it, and we redid it for them, and they got the whole $200,000 forgiven. So there's definitely been a lot of that kind of stuff. And, you know, as far as what you mentioned about some people just completely specializing in those programs, we found it necessary to, we have one of our staff members here that really kind of took the lead on those, and you know, just kind of made himself the kind of go-to person for PPP and ERC and some of the other various grants that exist. And I think that's important, because you got to be able to take care of client needs. Like you said, you know, they'll find somebody that can. So, you know, that's the nice thing about, we have a total of 14 people here. So we've got enough people that we can have somebody focus on those things while still keeping our core business going. So it's not a matter of, okay, do we help people with the PPP or do we do taxes and accounting? We
do both. Yeah, you don't want to just go into one ear. Now, how long will this business for PPP keep companies busy, the firms?
So we have round one and round two. So round one, those applications need to be completed, depending on when you took your loan out, between July and September, depending on when you took your loan out. And then we'll have the round two applications that are going to, you know, those will have to be completed, you know, probably closer to the end of the year, early next year. So it just, I think we're going to stay, to answer your question, I think we're going to stay busy the rest of calendar year 21 and actually probably into 22, both with those and the employee retention credits. Because with the rules with the employee retention credits got changed, originally it was going to be you either got a PPP loan or you got an employee retention credit. And the PPP loan was a lot more favorable. So everybody was getting those and nobody really worried too much about the employee retention credits. Whereas now, those are a big deal because, you know, anybody who had their capacity restricted, there's some other qualifying things, like if, you know, the government made you not be able to perform an essential like portion of your business or whatever. Anybody like that qualifies regardless of their income threshold, if their income went down or up or whatever. But then also businesses that didn't have that government interference or whatever you want to call it, those businesses that had an income reduction 50% quarter over quarter in 2020, or 20 for the 2021 ERC, a 20% reduction between the equivalent quarter and 19, those businesses end up qualifying for it as well. So, you know, for us, it's number one, making sure that the client's books are accurate. So if they do qualify, we can determine they actually do qualify for it, and then preparing the calculations, preparing the amended payroll returns, or communicating with their payroll provider, just depending on, you know, if we're doing it after the fact or if we're, you know, kind of doing it the same quarter, and then getting all that filed. I think, and then I also think there's just so much money in these things. I think it would be foolish for the IRS not to audit a good number of these ERC claims. So, or at least have somebody look at the documentation, because right now, the way it stands, there's not documentation that you submit with these. You know, you essentially submit an amended payroll return with a number on a line. And, you know, how do you calculate that number? Well, obviously, for all the ones that we do, I have work papers and everything else, which we're happy to share with whomever needs to look at those down the road. But, you know, you kind of worry, are there people out there that are just putting a number down and moving along with their day, and then, you know, getting some sort of a humongous $250,000 tax credit that maybe they weren't entitled to. So I think that there's opportunities for both error and fraud here. So I think there's got to be some level of oversight.
Was the amount of your legal liability, did that increase tremendously? Did you think about that, getting involved with these plans? You're dealing with the government, and, you know, they have unlimited resources that if they want to give, you know, the accountants a hard time and the clients, did you have to increase your professional liability insurance?
We did it. I mean, we carry professional liability insurance. So, I mean, you know, we've always carried adequate professional liability insurance. So that wasn't a concern. I mean, I guess for somebody, maybe somebody that didn't have professional liability insurance or had a very small dollar amount, like maybe a sole practitioner, for example, maybe that might be a concern they should worry about. But on the firm side, for firms, I don't really see this being much different than really a lot of the other stuff that we do from a liability standpoint.
Are you a sole proprietor or do you have partners?
So I own 100% of the firm. I've got a total of 14 on staff.
Do you lose some good people because they come in and they say, gee, is there any opportunity here for us to be a partner? Or they see that you're the only partner, all right? Do you get into a problem like that?
So we have not to this point. You know, I've got a pretty young CPA, like track staff where, you know, people are kind of getting out of college, kind of getting developed in their careers. And like I said, I really pride myself in taking good care of our staff. So, you know, we do during busy season, even before COVID, during busy season, you know, we bring lunch in every day for our staff. You know, I think we pay people well. I think we provide good benefits, health insurance, 401k, provide opportunities for advancement. So I don't think it's an issue. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't really see it.
You think there's an issue? Is there a shortage of accountants to go after, or are you seeing that issue?
Yeah, certainly. So this busy season, so like, you know, if we start in January 1st, we made two full-time senior accountant hires. That's something that typically doesn't happen during busy season.
No.
Just because of the increase in volume. So yeah, I mean, I think the market's really good right now for talent. So I think those firms that aren't taking care of people, I think they're probably going to see some attrition. One other thing that we did that I think is, I mean, really propelled success is we kept the office open. We didn't shut down a single day with any of this stuff going on. You know, obviously we want to keep.
Did you let people work at home?
Nope. We didn't have anybody working at home. We have one staff member who's fully remote, so obviously she was working at home. But yeah, we didn't have people working at home. We had everybody in the office, and actually, I mean, with my drive in, it was like cut in half because there's no cars on the road. And actually, I mean, I think it kept my mental sanity to just keep coming. You know,
no commuting, routine.
You know, just coming to the office. Talking to humans, not doing all this Zoom stuff. You know, obviously, we definitely have had a big drop off in clients physically coming into the office. You know, so we've had to, you know, we've always had the ability to send documents electronically and to, you know, have clients upload us documents, you know, video conferencing, everything like that. We've just seen more of it, you know, really in the last, whatever it's been, 14 months. So, we've seen more of it, but yeah, I mean, I also think we've had a lot of clients that have appreciated the fact that our office is open and, you know, you want to come see us, you can come see us. And that's been the case, you know, the whole time from the standpoint of a lot of people have, I mean, they trust us with a lot of their financial matters, especially those, you know, we have about 60 businesses that outsource all their accounting to us. You know, we need to be accessible to those guys. You know, if they want to come have a conversation, they can do that. If they, you know, if they have some sort of a urgent accounting need, they're not worried about our distributed workforce all over the city trying to figure out how do I print this out? How do I scan this in? You know, we have all that equipment here. You know, we've got, you know, access to each other. I mentioned to you earlier, I've got a young staff. Well, with that comes a lot of the kind of, you know, being able to share that knowledge and mentor people. And I think you lose a lot of that when you're, when everybody's working from home.
Thank you so much for listening to Jaeger CPA Review and More. As a token for our appreciation for your listenership, we'd like to offer you 10% off your next purchase with Jaeger CPA Review. Save between $50 to $150 with code PODCAST10. If you'd like more information, look us up on JaegerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.